Ladies and gentlemen,
this is the one we've all been waiting for. It's good night, freaking Irene!
Let's get ready to rumble!
Time! And those had enough people, the fire truck out!
Yeah, but I had forgotten when we met that you actually had been training at Top Team. I had forgotten that.
Yeah, well, you can forget it. I mean, I've trained at Tiger before. Honestly, like I had never trained MMA over there, like in Thailand at all. Because, I mean, typically, I like Phuket as an island, but I don't like training there. Is not really.
Yeah.
Like, when I go there, it's kind of like that's so Western to me.
Yeah, and that's a thing that I think a lot of people. You know, that people that have trained around Thailand, definitely, like, that is one of the things that they say, is that it's very westernized. And, yeah, to be fair, it is.
Which, I've talked to many people, and the people, like, when I have people on, or I talk to them, or they ask me advice, because, like, I've trained all over at so many different gyms, like, with Fight Chase, my website, I do reviews of all the gyms I train at. And so they ask me, you know, I'm going over, my first trip to Thailand, where should I go? And I'm like, well, honestly, like your first trip, go to Tiger. You're going to get good all-around training. The facility is, you know, top-notch. There's none better. And then you have all the beaches. You're on an island. It's beautiful. I was like, but don't go and book 3 months at Tiger if you've never seen anything else in Thailand. Like, you know, definitely get there and get used to it. But the experience that you're going to have that I feel like people have at Tiger is like, it's a very cool community. The whole street, the whole soy is like, it's real awesome. And it doesn't make like Westerners feel uncomfortable. Whereas, you drop somebody in, you know, a rural Thailand where you could barely get some communication out, you know, through people and people get a little nervous. If you go to the soy, I told Khalil, I was like, man, because I'd already been in Thailand for, I think, 8 months before I went over and met up with Khalil. I was like, this is the most English I've heard, like, people speak in the whole time I've been here.
Yeah. No, for sure. It's definitely, like, on the street is definitely, you know, kind of a big community, especially there's a lot of, you know, people that are repeat customers that continue to come back. And you're definitely right about that. It is definitely very English friendly speaking on the street,
which is cool because, you know, a lot of us traveling from, you know, when I went to Thailand, it was my first time out of the country other than Canada, you know, like and the other side of the world.
I think that's that for me the same thing. Before I moved here, I had never been anywhere other than like Canada, and I think I went on a cruise in the Caribbean, which
that too, I didn't really count.
Exactly what I mean is not really traveling, but I think that there's a lot of Americans that don't travel. So I've definitely realized that, you know, being over here. So it's,
And then once you get there and, you know, Bangkok, like if you land in Bangkok, that's like a smack in the face with the sights and smells and all that stuff. And then, you know, you go over, once you get down to Phuket, it's like, oh, all right, it's a little more laid back. You start to see all the beaches. And I mean, you could get used to that. I mean, obviously you did. It's beautiful. You know, it's amazing. And within, you know, 15-minute motorbike ride, you could be at 9 different beaches, which are, you know, tropical paradise.
For sure. I remember when I first got here, seeing, you know, like riding my motorbike and stuff to the beach and just being like, oh, I'm not leaving here. And here I am today.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I started going, I think my first trip was 2015. And I stayed for my buddy Kurt met me in Bangkok. He had already been there the previous year. He met me in Bangkok. We were in Bangkok for like 2 days, Pattaya for 2 days. And then he's like, well, you know, I have a room in Phuket, because he was training at AKA. He's like, hey, we'll just go down there. I'm like, all right, cool. So we went down there, and it was like my first trip. I didn't even train because I just wanted to see everything. It was like I was just like, oh my God, you know, a new culture, a new world. And I wanted to see everything. So like, we were just doing stuff every day. And
it's a complete, like, if you've never been out of the States and then you come here for the first time, it is definitely like a cultural shock. I mean, it's I was like that as well, you know, just like, so couldn't believe everything was so different and stuff.
So it's just so refreshing. It's like nice. People are nice. The weather's nice. Like, it was just nice. Like, I've lived in Florida, and people are like, oh, how's the weather in Thailand? I'm like, it's kind of similar to Florida. You get, you know, the rainy season's kind of like hurricane season. It's, you know, it's not as drastic, but you get flash floods, you get all that good stuff. You know, you have hot weather. It's pretty good. So it's like, that was good. And then, but as soon as I got back to the States, I was like, I have to go back. And I had come back, I believe it was September 1st. And in November, I was already going back. So
yeah, I think Thailand does that to everybody. They come here and then they're just like, oh man, I need to get back as soon as possible.
Yeah, I've never heard anybody go, I didn't really like Thailand. That's crazy.
Yeah, like, me as well. For sure.
It's like, oh no, yeah, I went to Thailand once. No, I've never heard that. It's always, if they've gone once, they're like, I can't wait to get back. It's crazy. And I'll be back. I was supposed to be back sooner, but I'll probably be back in June. I just had some stuff come up with my family that my sister wanted me to help her out with. So I was like, all right, I need to get back. And then I was like, this cold weather sucks. We had like 2 foot of snow in our first storm.
Oh, like, that sounds miserable.
I'm like, I hate this stuff. I like go to the gym and, you know, I'm so used to just throwing on a pair of shorts and a sweatshirt. And it's like, whoa, wait a minute. It's like 12 degrees out. This is ridiculous. So basically, let's get into where you started martial arts. Like, what really got you into martial arts when you, like, what opened your eyes to that?
My dad was a wrestler and started my brother and I both when we were, like, 5 years old. And I wrestled from the time that I was about five and wrestled in college as well until I graduated and then started fighting. I also karate a little bit as well for like probably 6 or 7 years within that time as well.
So do you, this is a weird question because I've never even heard anybody talk about it, do you consider wrestling, which obviously wrestling and mixed martial arts is huge, it's like probably one of the most proficient bases, but do you consider it a martial art?
I would say yeah, now I do. I mean, I didn't really think about that at, you know, the time that I was wrestling,
right?
Like as a kid and stuff. But looking back at it now, yeah, I think it, you know, I think it definitely is.
I mean, it has all the same dedication. I mean,
yeah, or more. For sure. Yeah. For sure. I agree with that 100%. But it's not like your stereotypical, like, you know, when I think about martial arts, I think about like probably karate, like first of all.
Yeah.
And, you know, other things like that, like more traditional martial arts. So I probably didn't look at it as that, you know, then, but I definitely do now.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I've never even heard any, I just, when you said it, because we haven't had a lot of wrestlers on. We've had a lot of fighters on that don't wrestle, you know, so it's like for, I mean, we had Ryan Couture on. I mean, obviously his dad's Randy, so that was like, you know, his deal, but, if you really look at it, we think of wrestling as a sport, but if you ask somebody in mixed martial arts, what do you need? And 99% of people will be like, yeah, well, you should know wrestling. Like that's a great base.
Oh so yeah, for sure.
You know, it's transformed into a martial art in its own, but it's, so you got, when did you like kind of go over into MMA and what kind of caused that?
Before my senior year in 2008, when I went home, because we wrestled, like, pretty much if you're on scholarship, you're wrestling, like, 11 months out of the year. And so I did, like, summer camps and stuff. And then I went home and was training with my brother Frank because he was going to be a freshman. And his coach had opened an MMA gym. Him and his partner, and so I went there to wrestle with Frank to stay in shape, and I kind of started doing BJJ and Muay Thai just like for kind of for fun, really. And like really liked it, and I went and saw a fight, and I was like, man, I'm gonna fight when I'm done with college. You know, I had a year left, and kind of like I would go cut weight and hit the heavy bag, and just kind of like watched MMA videos and stuff my senior year while I was wrestling. And then after the national, tournament, I started training right away, and had two amateur fights, moved to Atlanta, and then the rest is history.
I saw that. You only had two amateur fights, and the rest of your record's all pro?
Yeah.
That's like total opposite of what happens these days.
Yeah. There was definitely amateur then, and it kind of varies in, you know, in the states, like from state to state. In North Carolina, I think you needed like five amateur fights and then you could turn pro. And it was the same in Georgia when I moved there, when I moved to Atlanta. And I had two amateur fights and kind of at that time was over it and went to South Carolina to so that I could fight pro.
Doing it for free kind of sucks, right?
Yeah.
That's even though the money's not great.
Yeah, that's because like amateur, you know, it was definitely amateur was around, but it wasn't like there wasn't, you know, the World Federation and everything like there is now and all these, you know, overseas events, and which is awesome that they have that now. But back then it was just kind of like, you know, and that wasn't even like thinking about it. It wasn't that long ago.
Right.
Because, you know, the sport's still so young. But to seems like it seems quite, you know, quite a long ways away.
Yeah, the sport is it's so accelerated by the popularity of TV and stuff like that. I mean, and then the internet just blows everything up. And
oh, yeah, for sure.
You can market yourself. And it's just it's crazy that how fast that sport has actually gone from actually not existing to what it is today.
Oh, yeah. You
know, I mean, it's not for the level sure. of. It's not the level of like a football or soccer or baseball right. or anything like that. I mean, that's been around 100 years or whatever now. And, you know, you got MMA, which is like, all right, you know, what is it? 93 was the first UFC, which I'm sure that was just the first when they said, okay, let's do it. But people were doing right. stuff, you know, and but it didn't get popular until what Ultimate Fighter kind of really broke it out.
Yeah, that was like around my freshman year of college. I remember watching the Ultimate Fighter, like the first one.
Yeah.
And just kind of like thinking like, oh man, that would be cool to do that one day, but not really being serious about it until, you know, 4 or 5 years later.
And that's what's crazy is like a lot of people's stories, like Khalil's story was the same thing. A lot of my friends that have gone on to fight pro, you know, they're like, yeah, it was the Ultimate Fighter. I seen it on TV and we could do that. It's like,
right.
You know, when I watched ninja movies when I was little, I never thought, man, I could be a ninja. I wanted to be a ninja, but you know, you never thought like, oh yeah, I could do that. You know, you get the Ultimate Fighter, I think did it really well because they showed us people that, you know, you could relate to, you know, you had the wild drunk party guys, you had, you know, the guys that were serious athletes and then, you know, everybody could kind of pick a personality you could kind of relate to. And then you're like, whoa, but they get in a cage and fight. You're like, oh, all right, you know, and if you were interested in that, you could relate to it, and it would kind of trigger that, and it triggered in a lot of people. So you get through your MMA career. Well, I mean, are you done? I think 2016 was your last fight.
I think it was in 2016. I definitely am. I'm not fighting anymore. That was my last fight, and just kind of, like, I wasn't at that point, I wasn't sure if I was done or not. And then I honestly just got so busy coaching and cornering guys and just kind of made my mind that, you know, that was it. And this is the other chapter in my life now, and I'm coaching.
Yeah. So you went over to Tiger while you were fighting, right?
Yeah. I moved to Thailand in 2014. And I initially came for the Tiger tryouts and made the team and everything and started coaching not long after that. I was the wrestling coach and the assistant MMA coach. And then after a while, I became the head MMA coach.
And what was the transition for you with that? Like, I mean, it seems over there, they don't have a lot of the wrestling coaches. So, like,
I think, you know, in my time, it was starting to, you know, be more foreign coaches. But before that, yeah, there wasn't. And basically, Brian Ebersole was leaving, and he had got married and stuff and was leaving. So I became the assistant coach to Roger Huerta at the time, and I was the wrestling coach and the assistant MMA coach to him. And yeah, just, you know, did that for a while, and then he eventually moved on, and then I became the MMA coach. And, you know, brought my brother out, and the staff's definitely changed since then. But we have, you know, probably the best staff that we've had ever.
That place is so ridiculously big. People don't understand it. Like, when I try to explain Tiger to somebody, I'm like, well, you see the gym that we're in? What if there was 20 of those?
Yeah, it's, you know, man, it really is. It's, you know, and when I first came here, like, it was, thinking back about it, it was still nice, but it was definitely like, you know, they were still using bamboo and stuff like that to hold things up. And, but there was still a grill, and it was still a big camp, you know, the same size as it is now, but now it's, everything's like, you know, steel and held up, and it's really nice facilities compared to how it was then.
When I came over, Cleo was like, yeah, I'm going to go to the, his first, the pro sparring when he went over there. And I'm like, I don't even know where it is. You know, like the place was, and then I was asking like some of the Thai coaches, and they're like, I don't know what you're talking about. And I'm like, all right. And I'm like, well, all right, where is it? And then once it like up the hill in the back, I'm like, oh, okay. I get it now. But it was definitely like, that place is so huge. And then now you got two other locations, right?
Yeah. Now they have a location in Chiang Mai that we just opened up in the last 3 or 4 months. And there's also another location here in Phuket, like right near the main gym, Tiger Muay Thai Beachside. And it's,
where is that one?
It's off of, if you know, do you know where Suwit Stadium used to be?
I believe so.
Yeah. It's honestly about 2 miles from the main gym, but right on the beach or the bay. And so they opened that, and then we're opening, actually Tiger just built an actual beach club, which they're opening on Christmas Day.
Oh, Jesus. So business isn't bad.
Yeah, they're constantly expanding.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, definitely, if you're going for your first time and you want to still feel comfortable while getting good training in, that's a place to be. I mean, have you gone to other gyms, like, personally trained in Thailand?
To be honest, no, I haven't. I've been to a couple other Muay Thai gyms and trained.
Right.
But that's it.
Yeah. What other Muay Thai gyms did you visit?
When I first got here, I've been to Fairtex once. I was there for an MMA event, which was pretty cool to go to Pattaya, and just a couple other gyms, like just honestly like stopping by with friends and stuff in Bangkok. But that's it. Just very, very small gyms.
Which small gyms are awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I went
old school, traditional.
Oh yeah. They're the best, like very gritty. I went to Patch India as well. Last time that I was in Bangkok, I went there and met Khalil and got like a tour of the place and stuff, which was pretty cool to see.
Yeah, I mean, with the history and the name, and then the modernization that they're implying into that whole business now is crazy.
Oh yeah, it's
the champions that they're putting out of there.
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure.
I trained at 13 Coins. In Bangkok with Sagat, and that was like grimy, old, like everything is done in like wood. And it was funny as Sagat was telling me, he was showing me around, and he's like, you see the cage? And there's literally like this almost kind of like a old ring, and then they put cage, and it was square, so they put like cage around it. And he's like, yeah, train MMA in there. And I'm like, no, that's where you fight chickens. Like, it looked like a cockfighting ring. It was bad. And I was like, he was just laughing at me. I'm like, no. I mean, it was funny, as I tell people the story, like, how everything, like the ring get real dry, and people, they'll put water on them and stuff. and I was training with Sagat, and Sagat like starts drinking water and then spitting it on the ground on the mat. And I'm like, oh man, I had, I got my website sponsored by Defense Soap a long time ago. So when I was over in Thailand, I had all my Defense Soap. I'm like, well, I'm not going to get staff or anything from this mat, hopefully.
Yeah, that's probably a good thing that you brought that with this one.
Oh yeah. I mean, so many people, like, it's just hard. I mean, you know, they don't use the same, modern cleaning equipment that some of the gyms do here. And then just being outside, it just,
yeah, it's definitely like, I think the climate has a huge part, you know, to do with the staff and stuff.
Oh yeah. I mean, you're just kind of festering all the bacteria and stuff.
Yep.
It's not going to die. It's humid and wet and hot, and it's just gonna, it'll be fine. So it's like shower after every training and scrub.
Oh yeah, for sure. That's what I always say in my classes, you know, shower and stay hydrated.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So you get over there. Like how did it feel to kind of transfer out of fighting into coaching?
It was honestly, it was kind of like a natural progression. Yeah. I wanted to be more committed to coaching, and just started taking it more serious and, you know, doing, honestly, like traveling with a lot of the fighters that we have. And that was kind of like, you know, I knew once I started traveling that, I mean, fighting is a selfish sport. You know, if you want to be good and you want to get to the top, you have to be selfish. That's, you know, just how it is. And I knew that, you know, whether I was fighting or coaching, one of them was going to give if I was doing both of them. So I just kind of went with coaching, and the rest is history.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things is like, yeah, the fighter has to be selfish. The coach can't be selfish.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
it's 100%. Like, they're polar opposites, you know?
Yep.
I mean, so you get into coaching, and I mean, man, it's a very unique thing that goes on at Tiger. I mean, every corner of the earth, people show up at Tiger and train MMA.
Oh yeah. There's people from, man, in any one class, you know, I have people from all over the world.
And how's communicating with them?
I think I do an okay job of getting my point across, but yeah, at times it can be harder, you know, to try to do.
Because what I saw is you put, I don't know, you have what, 60 people in a pro sparring class, and it's like, how do you control 60 alpha people, you know, and telling them, all right, we're simulating fights now. You know, I saw some of the guys going hard, and it's like, how we were. At Vanderlei's, that's kind of how we were, but man,
it is hard to you know, to try to control. It honestly, it depends on the time of the year. You know, if it's high season, sometimes, yeah, there could be 60 people in the class. Most of the time, you know, I have between 30 and 40, and which isn't too bad to handle. When it's more than that, it gets to be a bit, you know, hard. And for the most part, I try to make sure that, you know, the guys that are on my team and the guys that I coach and stuff, and girls as well, you know, are controlled sparring. And, you know, occasionally, you know, if there's people from the same countries that, you know, want to give it to each other, I'm okay with that.
We're not talking about the Russian Dagestani type of guys, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of different places that, you know,
they like to spar
hard, so. If it's, yeah, when it's them with each other, I'm okay.
Yeah, when we were at Vanderlei's, Ali, do you know Ali from like Khabib's manager?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so Ali used to bring in Khabib and Vanderlei's. And then, of course, he would come in with five or six other guys, all his cousins, or I believe that's what he would tell us. And to watch them spar, oh my God, you'd swear it was like a title fight. Like they would go so hard, and it's like, man, how do you guys last? And they're just tough as nails, and they beat the hell out of each other.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think that it's something that has changed over time. Like even in you know, the time of MMA that I came in 2009, I think it's definitely changed a lot since then, you know. And in 2009, it had changed a lot, as you know, since the start of MMA. So I think it's something that's changing all the time. But there's definitely still a lot of, you know, a lot of hard sparring, and depending on where you're at and what area of the world as well.
Yeah, it's, people understand that if you're going to make it a career, your body's going to last too.
Right, right.
And we didn't know all that with, you know, the health risks and stuff like that back, you know, even 5 years ago. So
right. Yeah, for sure.
Like the UFC Institute and stuff like that, the UFC Training
Center. Yeah,
it's
definitely, you know, with the weight cutting and everything, it's definitely they're trying to make changes.
Yeah. How do you feel about that? I mean, you're a wrestler. Like, that was ingrained in you.
Like, yeah, I think that as long as you have weight class, in my opinion, and that doesn't mean anything, but in my opinion, as long as you have weight classes and there's a weight that has to be met, there's, you know, there's always going to be people trying to make that weight, trying to, you know, get the advantage. And honestly, it's just, I mean, weight cutting was there when I started wrestling, and you know, I didn't do it as a kid. My dad didn't ever make me cut weight. It was always my decision. But
yeah,
it's just like ingrained in, you know, the culture. And it's, I think it's getting better. And, you know, there's more awareness now of it. And like, you know, people are trying to promote, you know, going up weight classes and stuff, and even promotions and stuff are, you know, trying to make it better. But as long as there's a weight class, I think there's always going to be weight cutting.
Well, I mean, in jiu-jitsu, like when I competed a lot of jiu-jitsu, even the nagas and stuff like that really don't mean anything.
Right.
We were still cutting weight. And it was only because, like, we came from an MMA gym, and that was kind of like, here's what you do when you compete.
Yeah, 100%. And that's what I mean. It's the culture of combat sports.
Yeah.
If you're in combat sports, there's always going to be, you know, a weight class and making weight. And there's always going to be weight cutting. I don't think it'll ever change, honestly.
How about, I mean, you deal with fighters in all the organizations now with, one does hydration tests, right?
Yeah, they do hydration tests. I think there's actually a couple different tests, like hydration being the main one, but, yeah.
And I think
it's a big step towards in the right direction, but I think there's guys that still cut weight for sure.
Of course,
but not a lot.
Yeah. I mean, once you're held to different like rule sets, I mean, you got to kind of still abide by them. So if they're going to limit, you know, how much you can really deplete your body, then there's only so much you could do to it. Especially if it's scientific and they're saying, okay, yeah, but if you go under this, you don't fight. Well, all right, you know, you make sure you don't. So like. Dealing with, I mean, you have a certain amount of fighters that are in the gym consistently. You have like your fight team that the guys that are there for like a year at a time or something like that. But as far as a gym, I mean, it's very unique because one, you have tourism training, which I don't think you'd have to deal too much with, do you really?
Well, you know, like in my I teach two classes a day. The beginner and amateur class that my brother and I teach, it's, you know, all of them are paying customers that are there, you know, to learn.
Right.
And then we teach the same class, but for professionals at 4 o'clock. And that is like some of the fighters that are in there are sponsored fighters that Tiger sponsors. And then other ones are just MMA fighters that are actual pro fighters that just come to Tiger to train, and they're paying as well.
Okay.
So there's a lot of, you know, a lot of guys that are actual pro fighters that I'm not their coach. They're just there doing the class, you know, and whatnot. And then there's, you know, the ones that I actually coach and have, you know, a relationship with and things like that.
And that's like a huge difference from most most coaches. Like most coaches, you have a gym, you have your fighters, which obviously you do too, but you don't have such a big group of other people sprinkled in. Usually you have one or two guys every once in a while that are stopping in when you have a gym that's, you know, in the States, basically, that you're their coach, And then you have visitors every once in a while, but you have your main guys. So you still have your main guys that you have to focus on, that, you know, guys and girls, obviously, but that you focus on your main team. And then you're throwing in, you know, the same amount or more on a regular basis of people that aren't really, obviously, they are your responsibility as being, you know, a Tiger coach, but not on the same level as the fighters that you have that you're responsible for having progress under you.
Yeah, for sure. You know, even the fighters that I have, they're, you know, are fighters or whatever, but they're still from other countries, you know, obviously just coming here to do fight camps, or they live here year round. So it is a very different gym. But yeah, you know, if I have a class of 40 people and a pro class, you know, I'm going to help every, you know, anybody who needs help and try to help them with their technique or whatever it is that I can help with. But definitely, you know, I'm paying attention and, you know, giving my time and attention to the fighters that are actual, you know, my fighters as well. Like, I hope everybody, but, you know, I'm going to make sure that our fighters are taken care of first and foremost.
And then how, like, I know, like, how does it kind of figure in? Because I know basically right now you're Khalil's MMA coach. Like, Khalil gets a call. He tells me, oh, yeah, I've been at Pettin D. I got a fight lined up. I'm going over to Tiger. So you're his coach. He doesn't have a coach somewhere else for MMA, for fighting. But then you have people like Valentina that come in and they kind of fight under the Tiger banner. But doesn't she bring her coaching staff with her or training partners, or how does that work?
Yeah. Well, when Valentina first came, her and her sister, you know, they brought their coach Pavel with them as well. And he's just, you know, they've all been like a part of the team for a long time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they do a lot of their own training. They do do some of the team training and stuff as well, but they also do a lot of their team training. And, you know, occasionally, like, I'll put some input about something or, you know, whatnot, or my brother, or one of the BJJ coaches. But for the most part, you know, they do their own training. But that's pretty much just them, because they, you know, they work as a unit, you know, as a family and stuff. And for the most part, they're like a family. So their coach has been, you know, a part of their team since they came here.
And so when you have other fighters, so basically what it is a fighter will come to you for their fight camp. Is that normally how it's working?
Yeah, it honestly, like, you know, fighters will come for fight camps and then, you know, maybe kind of do it by themselves the first time, or, you know, have some coaches, and then some guys just come and, you know, it's just them and, you know, myself, or, you know, one of the other coaches just ends up, you know, having a relationship with them. And then that kind of goes from there, and, you know, we start to help them and then go to corner them and just, you know, kind of like Khalil, you know, I just talked to him and we kind of clicked, and that was that.
Yeah. And you ended up traveling. You're always all over the world now, huh?
Yeah. I travel quite a bit.
So when you were a wrestler, did you see that happening?
Yeah, I would have never thought, because, you know, wrestling's kind of how I started working here, but I would have never thought that, you know, wrestling would have taken me into MMA and then to see the world. That's for sure.
It's a different, like, we don't realize, you know, things that were kind of very, like, people wrestled, you know, to get scholarships, to get education, to go into business at some point, you know, like,
right. Oh, yeah.
You were doing it to get, you know, a different thing in life. You weren't going to be a professional wrestler and do that typically. So, but now with, you know, like all sorts of different things, I mean, combat sports opened up a lot to, you know, opportunities of different platforms to use that, which is great.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
So now that you have like these fighters going in and out, how do you manage that? I mean, do you kind of like, what is your mindset when you go into to teach your pro class? You know, it's kind of like, how do you weigh out your coaching? Like, is it just over the whole class you're going to have, you know, I gotta teach this class, and then do you it's almost unfortunate. Like, it's like, are you playing favorites basically to your guys?
I wouldn't call
I mean, I don't favorite. Want you to say it that way. Yeah.
No, no, no. It's not. It's, again, it, you know, if I have 40 people in a class, I'm going to help everybody that, you know, needs help and has a question or anything like that for sure.
Yeah.
But definitely, like, if I have a fighter that has a fight coming up, you know, maybe that day we'll teach things more specific towards, you know, those fighters that have fights coming up that are things that they need to work on.
Yeah.
But I would say, for the most part, you know, we kind of teach a certain style of teaching and a certain system of things that we do. And those are, you know, a lot of the same drills that we do all the time that we think are, you know, drills that are very necessary when it's not actual live sparring or live rolling or wrestling. So we kind of teach a specific system. But again, yeah, if, you know, if we have guys that have fights coming up, you know, we'll do things a lot of times more specific to what they need.
You can't, I mean, it's like I said, it's not playing favorites. It's just kind of prioritizing what needs to be done as in a
it's like you said, it's a very unique and very different gym. It's, you know, there's paying customers and then there's guys that are like our fighters.
Right. How big is your fight team as far as like who would be your fighters?
It honestly varies month to month. You know, because people are constantly coming and going from, you know, their countries and stuff that are on our fight team. So it changes all the time, you know, who has fight camps and who doesn't.
And so, like, how much do you have to do with the Tiger tryouts? A lot of people have seen the videos and thought, oh, my God, that's, like, crazy torture. And, you know, they, like, do you get to coach in a lot of that stuff?
Yeah, well, for the most part, like, the part that I have the most say in is the wrestling part, I would say. But mm-hmm. I kind of let my brother run that because I try to break it up. Like, I oversee the MMA portion of it, but I kind of run it, whereas I want to see, you know, what they have in the striking elements of, like, boxing and kickboxing, how they do with the Muay Thai trainers, how they do with wrestling with my brother, how they do in the BJJ session with the BJJ coaches, Alex and Emilio and Tariq. And I kind of just oversee the whole thing, but I don't try to get involved entirely too much.
And so for people that have watched that, what are you guys looking for when to have somebody be a Tiger MMA fighter?
A lot of things, you know, looking for people first and foremost who have, you know, a lot of heart and intestinal fortitude, looking for skilled fighters, you know, people who, you know, can push when they need to push. Because, you know, we only have 3 days to really kind of assess all of the, you know, the contestants, which isn't, you know, it's not a lot of time. So it's kind of like you try to make it, we always try to make the first session kind of hard and grueling, so it kind of wears them down, and then we see, you know, their technique and how hard they push from there on out throughout the trials. And it's definitely, it's not a long process, but it's, you know, a short and hard process. And you know, not only do we look for that, but we also interview at all, you know, for the most part, all of the ones that we're interested in, and, you know, try to see their personality and make sure mm-hmm. that they'll, you know, they'll be a good fit for the team as well, because we don't want to have people that are, you know, bringing, you know, negative attention or anything.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, that with the influx of people interested in being fighters, I think it's cool because it's almost, it's not washed out, but there's so many more good people than just, you know, guys that just want to fight. You know, that's not really the mentality of it anymore, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Do you have like one? I mean, you've gone all over the world. You traveled with all these people. Is there any like fights that you've gone to that really stick out in your mind?
I would say probably so far, the fight at UFC Atlanta, actually the first time that I cornered Khalil.
Yeah.
Because I was there with Khalil, and my brother was there. He had gone to help Israel Adesanya train for his fight against Kelvin Gastelum. Mm-hmm. And just the whole week, you know, kind of like hanging out with both, you know, both everybody hanging out together.
And you were basically home, right?
Yeah, I was basically home. You know, I'm from North Carolina, but I spent most of my time after college before I moved to Thailand in Atlanta. So, yeah, it was kind of like being home and seeing old friends. And, you know, Khalil won and Israel won. And we were actually both Israel and his camp and, you know, myself and Khalil and all of us training at Manu Into, my old Muay Thai coach's gym. Okay. And Manu, actually, he was my Muay Thai coach in America, but he's a big reason of why I'm also in Thailand. You know, he used to fight at Lumpini in Bangkok back in the 90s in the golden era.
Oh, nice. And,
yeah, so it was really cool for me. It was a cool experience to, you know, after 5 years of not being back to Atlanta, you know, living in Thailand, going back with, you know, now being the coach and training Khalil and Frank, my brother, with Israel and all his coaches, who, you know, I'm very good friends with all of them. So it was a really cool experience for me to, you know, be back there training at my coach's gym, and then both of them, you know, both guys win. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that kind of spiked Khalil's, you know, popularity too. I mean,
oh yeah, for sure.
With the transformation that he had. I mean, he's always been, since people got a peek at him, he's a very unique, interesting guy. And then for people like to see like a switch in a fighter, you know, within fighting style and all that stuff, everybody's like, holy shit, this is crazy.
You yeah. know? He's Khalil's a good dude, man. He's a good dude and a good fighter.
Yeah, I mean, but he always, like, when we talk to him, we've had him on twice now, and I'm like, man, you're real humble. And he's like, I don't like that word. And, but he is. He's a super humble dude, and he'll do anything for somebody. And, you know, he's just a really good person. And I think that even shows, like, when he goes to fight, you know, and his training and all that stuff. But, yeah, he's back over in Thailand now. I'm sure he'll be coming to see you soon.
Yeah, I was talking to him today earlier. He's I know he's happy he's back.
Yeah. We talked to him on a Monday, and he's like, yeah, I gotta figure out when I'm going back to Thailand. And then he's like, I booked my ticket. And then it was like 2 days later, he's like, all right, I'm back in Thailand. I'm like, my God, you have like the craziest. I remember I was talking to him in, I want to say I was going to go hang out with him in December, because he was supposed to leave Thailand last year in like January, like at the first of the year. And then he left, and he was in like six countries in a month. And then he's like, then he came back and he goes, nope, I'm staying in Thailand. I'm like, all right, whatever.
Yeah. Thailand got him, bro.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, it does. And he's such a real spiritual and things like that. And it fits him perfect.
Yeah.
Any fights that you've been to that you were like, oh, I wish I hadn't gone to this one? Any places you visited or any of that kind of stuff that you're just like, this is a bad deal?
No, I can honestly say, like, even the like, I've been to China and India and trips that were not my most favorite ones, but they're, you know, they're all memories, man. I'm grateful for all of them. And even the ones that are not the best ones, I can look back on them and still laugh and think about, you know, the good times that I had there. So, I'm thankful for all of them.
Getting stuck in a bus with goats or something.
Yeah.
Even though it sucks, it's a heck of a story. So it's like, it's all right.
Yep.
So like Kurt usually asks most of our fighters some questions, and I figure you'd be even better to ask the same questions. Is one of them is like, you were a fighter, and it kind of transfers over because now you can give this advice to your, you know, to your fighters. But he likes to ask, like, how do you deal with fear? So like, when you were fighting, how did you deal with fear? And then how do you tell, like, how do you coach your fighters to deal with fear? Because we're going to fight, it's fear,
Yeah, for sure. It's I think everybody I think as a coach, everybody deals with it differently, you know. I dealt with it when I was fighting differently than a lot of other people did. And I think as a coach, you kind of have to, you know, get familiar with your fighter and kind of learn how they operate and how they tick before fights, because everybody handles the pressure and the fear differently. So you kind of have to, you know, after being with a fighter for a certain amount of time, you kind of understand how they work and how they tick and, you know, what stresses them out and what doesn't. And that's how I approach it as a coach.
Have you ever had one of those fighters, though, that is just so willing to I've seen this, this is why I'm asking, is so willing to kind of please you as a coach that is going to do whatever you say? You know what I mean? Like, have you ever had one of those guys that's just like, whatever you say, they're trying to soak up?
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely had that. But I think that even the ones that, you know, when they're they really want to please you and stuff, when the circumstances change, sometimes, you know, they change as well. Like, you know, maybe in training, they're, you know, they're doing everything that you say, but then if, you know, they're cutting weight, they, you know, may not handle it well or things change. But yeah, no, I definitely know what you mean.
Is there any different advice that you give to a guy like that? I mean, or you just kind of play it by ear? I mean, obviously coaching is, it's a very personal thing. So
yeah, I think it's, yeah, it is very personal. And again, I think you kind of learn how each person operates. So after being with a fighter for a certain amount of time, whatever the situation may be, you kind of, you know how to handle it after a while with that certain personality.
Yeah.
So I speak to all of them differently. You know, whether they're cutting weight, whether they're getting ready to walk out for the fight, you know, and all the different situations, you know, they're all the fighters that I have, you know, I deal with them differently.
And so, like, another thing that he likes to ask is, how do you, have you heard, like, what is the worst? I mean, you're a coach, you're in the back, you hear these things. It's like, what is the worst coaching advice that you've ever heard given to someone else? You don't have to give the names of who it was, but like something you've heard that you're like, that was wrong. You shouldn't have told that guy that.
Honestly, I can't think of anything right offhand. To be fair, I don't really, you know, unless I know the person in the back, I don't really,
yeah,
I don't pay attention to really what anybody else is saying. I'm kind of more focused on, you know, my fighter and what we have going on.
And what would be one thing that like that really impacted you that like a coach or something when you were coming up had told you? Is there anything that like sticks with you that really?
Yeah, in my MMA career, one time I had a fight and I got knocked out in 7 seconds. It was like the biggest learning experience of my MMA career of actual fighting. And luckily, I got to fight the guy again and beat him and stuff, but I rushed, basically. I rushed, like, it was ridiculous what I did. I just like rushed in, like attacking him, and then afterwards when I realized what had happened in the back, I Manu, my coach, who was my Muay Thai coach, I asked him what happened. He's like, you didn't catch the pigeons. And I was like, what the hell does that mean? And it was like, you know, when you try to catch pigeons, you have to give them bird seed so they come to you, and then you just, you know, you take them. But you can't just run at the pigeons because they're all going to run everywhere. And that was like a big, it sounds ridiculous, like him saying that, but it was a big lesson for me. And it's something that I, you know, occasionally if I have somebody that, you know, has a certain thing that I can kind of help them and say that too, I kind of say the same thing.
Now that makes a lot of sense though. Like, yeah. It's really good to be like, because you think about it, I mean, pigeons are all just run away when you run into them. So
yep.
that makes a lot of sense. Let's see. LT asks, I think that's all that he asks. I like to ask some other questions before I let you go that don't really have much to do with anything. what would be your go-to movie? Just chilling out, but you got to watch one movie. What would it be?
Man on Fire.
Oh, okay. not a new one, but a yeah, classic. Yeah.
It's definitely an old one. But yeah, that would be my go-to.
And what are you listening to music-wise?
Nothing like specific. I listen to hip hop and classic rock and indie music and Thai music and nothing specific.
Let's see. Do you have a favorite cheat food? I mean, you're not competing now, but something you're like, ah, oh, shit, I shouldn't have had that. I have to train tomorrow.
I eat everything. I had noodles tonight for dinner and a bag of chips after that, and I might have another bag of chips.
Isn't it nice not to be fighting?
Yeah.
And one other thing that I like to ask people is, do you believe in aliens?
Yes, 100%. Yeah.
Where are they? Are they coming from outer space, or have they already been here?
I have no idea, but they're definitely there.
Other than all that, how did you get into the rest of your businesses? I know you got a couple other businesses, right?
Yeah, I own a percentage of a tattoo shop, and I have a restaurant as well.
Nice. And those are pretty successful in the area. Everybody talks about them. So
yeah,
you're doing something, right?
I'm trying to.
Yeah. I mean, how did you end up staying?
One day on my motorbike was driving and was like, oh, this is beautiful. I don't want to leave this place.
Yeah.
And then I just got the opportunity to start coaching, and I pretty much fell in love with Thailand within the first month of coming here. And now I'm married. I have a kid and have a job and living life.
In paradise, what more could you ask for?
Yeah.
I will let you go because I know it's going to get late over there. That's about it for today. But I truly appreciate you joining me.
Yeah,
we tried to do this a few times with
being overseas kind of messed me up a bit.
Yeah, I had the same thing happen. Like I had to get Google Voice and transfer one of my phone numbers because I couldn't get any of my bank information sent to me while I was in Thailand. Because they're we can't do it because we have to text you something, like a confirmation.
Yeah, and that's...
I'm like,
you'd think in this day and age, you wouldn't have to do that, but...
Yeah. It's like, we need to fax you this. I'm like, what? Man, thank you so much, George. I appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure, brother. It's been I've enjoyed it.
Thanks. Your gym, Tiger Muay Thai, any social media, anything you want to shout out? Anything else? Your businesses?
You can follow me just on Instagram at ghick1. And if you come to Phuket, come see me at Tiger. And if you need a tattoo, come see us at ND Tattoo. And make sure you come have some island poke bowl while you're there.
Definitely. And I'll make sure I put the links to all those in the description. And I will send you a message before I release this episode, which will probably be next Monday.
Sounds good, brother.
All right, buddy. Have a good night over there.
You
enjoy paradise.
Well. Yeah.
Talk to you later. Bye. Thank you once again for listening to the number one combat sports podcast, the Fight Chase Muay Thai and MMA podcast. You can follow us on Fight Chase on all the social media, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, all that good stuff. And also, don't forget you can support us at any time. Go to the anchor.fm/fightchase, hit the support icon, and you can support us for as little as 99 cents a month. We truly appreciate it. Thank you for listening. And Kurt, don't say boom.
Boom.
Great survival story!